The Green Room with Orla Barry on News Talk.
Ever wondered what the Russians really make of the US president? Well, new film Our New President by Maxim Pozdorovkin gives us a glimpse into that world, and suffice to say, it's a pretty alarming view. The film is composed entirely from footage drawn from US TV, from YouTube clips and archive footage. It was one of the opening films at the Sundance Film Festival earlier this year, and this month it premieres at the Irish Film Institute in Dublin as part of its Documentary Film Festival. And Maxim joins us now, and welcome to you, Maxim. Let's start with the title, first of all, Our New President.
That is a very subversive pronoun.
Yes. So where did it come from exactly?
Well, you know, a couple of weeks after Trump was elected, our editor, Matvey Kulakov, came back from visiting his mother in Russia. And at this point, you know, the entire Russia story was just like a very faint, distant echo. Not many people were yet talking about it. And he comes back and he goes, yeah, everyone in Moscow is very excited about Trump. They keep on calling him our new president, our new president. And we were like, oh, that's interesting. Well, I wonder where that came from.
Yeah.
And so we decided to try to make a film about Trump's election and first year in office using basically primarily factual television and the news, but make it so that there's not a single true statement in the film. So to try to see if you could do that, because it seemed like if you could do that, that in itself would be sort of a statement about the informational media reality that we find ourselves in currently.
Did you succeed?
Well, you know, it's like there's that saying, what, like even a blind squirrel gets a nut at Christmas. So I think incidentally, there's certain people that, while trying to lie, end up telling the truth. So we got into a deep, a lot of reflection about whether what is actually true. And it gets hard to see, but we've mostly succeeded. And as you see in the film, there's a lot of wild things. And, you know, the reason that the film needed to be found footage is that there's almost this kind of purity where all the people that are regurgitating this disinformation online, none of those people have any eyewitness firsthand experience of America. Hmm. So in a way, it's almost like an isolated scientific experiment in that everything that they're saying is almost guaranteed to come from the news sources that we're juxtaposing against them.
Hmm. So, and some of the comments made by those news presenters and news sources, for example, speaking of not a single true statement, at one point we hear one of them saying Donald Trump may be assassinated before, and we asks, will Donald Trump live to see his inauguration? And the assassination attempt is government-sponsored plot. The protesters at the anti-Trump rallies are all paid actors, for example. These presenters had said this, Maxim, can you describe for us how important they are in terms of Russian TV and how they're valued by Russian viewers?
Yeah. I mean, you know, in 2013, there was a major consolidation of Russian media that's kind of continues the general trajectory of consolidation in, you know, that Putin has followed from the beginning of his first term. And so the consolidation of media has happened, and that has had the effect of basically really limiting even more the political narrative that goes on the federal channels, which are the main channels on television. And television is basically free in Russia. And this fact is important because by controlling the political narrative on television and how that works, the Kremlin gets about 87% of the population because the television is that dominant as a medium. The internet is making grounds, but it's still at around at the 13-14% mark. And so, as a result, it's really kind of this powerful vector. You know, one of the main figures in our film is Dmitry Kisilev, who is, in America, when I introduce him, I say, imagine if, like, Sean Hannity was twice as popular, literally twice as popular as he actually is, and then on top of that, he was put in charge of Reuters and the Associated Press and the New York Times all together. Hmm. Like, that's about the scale at which Dmitry Kisilev, who says some, you know, was famous for saying some horrendous things, but says plenty of horrendous things in the movie, but, you know, that's the person that runs that entire ship.
And in terms of, say, Russia today is probably what we're most familiar with here. And, you know, people often talk about Russia today being this propaganda machine in Russia. But also it's seen in some, you know, up to 100 countries, I guess, around the world, and it has millions of viewers. And to what extent do we know that people, I guess, accept and take on board and believe what's said?
I think that, you know, I get this question a lot, and I think that actually that question is the wrong question to ask. And the reason for this is, and I think that this is a mistake that we make when talking about Cambridge Analytica. It's when we're talking about, okay, how many millions did this breach reach or that breach? And the reason that I say that that's the wrong question is that what, at least my discovery of working with propaganda and both historically and on this film, is that whereas historical propaganda was much more about strategic disinformation in very limited quantities, propaganda today is much more about just broad disorientation. It's just sort of sowing confusion. You know, there's a moment in our film where a news anchor introduces Trump, right when he wins, as a troubled teenager from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know how good Irish people are with New York geography, but he's in fact a spoiled brat from Queens.
Exactly, yeah.
You wonder why make that mistake. It's not any more pro-Russian one way or the other, and it's almost hard to make that mistake. But if you think about that, but that illustrates that the new idea of how propaganda works is to just bombard people with as much inconsistent information as possible. And at a certain point, they kind of throw up their hands and just give up in engaging in any kind of epistemological analysis or process. And they just become perfect docile political subjects.
Does it sound a little bit like the way Trump behaves when it comes to things like Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen? He gives one version, then another, then another, then another. And eventually...
Exactly right. I think that Trump's MO is precisely to always pivot. It's very similar to a boxing move of stick and move, because in boxing, you'll never win a fight with stick and move. In a sense, you'll never knock someone down, but you'll disorient them and you'll tire them out. And with Trump, it's the same thing. His thing is to always pivot. And the second that you sort of try to engage with the reason for his pivot and you ask why, or you try to dig deeper, you almost lose inevitably, because then he gets you and he moves on to the next thing.
Why do the Russians, or the Russian TV presenters, like Trump?
Well, I mean, for one thing, I think that it's important to start, you know, but basically in our film begins with, and Trump doesn't come into it for basically the first 20, 25 minutes, because to indicate the fact that even though obviously he was mentioned during the election, then if you actually looked at and took stock of what was happening on Russian television at the time, it was primarily anti-Hillary and not pro-Trump. And it was, you know, and that followed a whole long kind of period of anti-Obama sentiment. And then Hillary was really demonized in a way that, you know, you see in the film, it's pretty extreme. And then also American elections were sort of delegitimized. There was a lot of coverage saying, there was a lot of coverage basically saying that the things that Russia today, in fact, does during Russian elections, like run voter carousels and have people vote 8 or 9 times a day, that this was happening in American elections. It's a kind of common tactic to accuse people of what you yourself are doing. And so, I think that that was the initial thing was that. Once Trump came on board, you know, he was the most sympathetic Russian candidate. There's a way in which he's sort of trashy in a way, and like, he's not exactly new rich, but he kind of has a certain kind of vulgarity that new rich that like new Russians and like new rich people in general seem to relate to. And then I think that the main important thing is that, you know, that Putin and a lot of even this media, they thrive on the symbolism of it, on the geopolitical symbolism of what they're doing, because, you know, a lot of these, like, you know, Russia does legitimately suffer because of sanctions and all these things. But as long as Putin can seem so grandiose on the stage symbolically, and, you know, the media is obviously very much involved in doing that, it kind of inflates Russia's standing. And I think that that's the game that's being played.
And have the presenters, because obviously, you know, Trump has at times changed his position somewhat on Russia and regarding sanctions. He appears to have gotten a little stronger and stricter about it. Have the presenters changed their opinion on Donald Trump then, or do they?
Yes. And, you know, right now we're actually making, we decided that since the story kind of keeps on going, that we have to make a trilogy out of this film. I'm making a sequel called Our New President 2, Prisoner, and it's called Our New President 2, Prisoner of the Deep State. Because the narrative in Russia has been that Trump loves us Russians, but he can't love us as fully and truly and purely as he wants because he's a prisoner of the deep state. That's going to be half Russian deep state conspiracies and half American, like QAnon and a lot of these conspiracies, because they sort of through the garbage dump that is the internet or what it's become, they are kind of in dialogue. So that's going to be much more about that. And I'm thinking about making a third part of the film, which will be all American content, but it will be about the next election and the paranoia, real or invented, we'll see, over Russian interference and the way that that has sort of infested, you know, because so much of this film is really about how do you make people actually feel something about fake news rather than just understand it intellectually, like understand why it's corrosive, why it's bad, broadly speaking. So
have we any idea if Donald Trump has seen any of this footage? Does he watch Russia Today? Does anyone know?
No, I'm not sure if he watches Russia Today. I mean, obviously, Roger Stone's been on Russia Today a lot. I mean, I think he watches Fox. I mean, I think that Donald Trump, though, probably intuitively I think that one thing, at least to my mind, that doesn't get stated enough in relation to Trump and his activities is that he follows sort of celebrity entertainment logic, or entertainment logic specifically, which is, you know, literally the logic of what would you rather keep watching on television. And through that lens, you know, even a lot of the drama with Russia, you know, serves him well in a certain way, in that it kind of perpetuates that. And so I'm not sure how, but that being said, I'm not sure what he watches besides, you know, the Fox News stuff.
Yeah, Fox and Friends every morning. Has it or could it be screened in Russia?
Yeah, you know, that's an interesting question, because I've made other films, and some of them, I made a film about Pussy Riot.
Yeah.
Banned in Russia.
And I was going to say, I presume that was never shown in Russia.
No, it was eventually, but the first screening was kind of banned. And, you know, it's hard to ban anything outright. Mm-hmm. And then I made a movie that was about a Russian arms dealer called The Notorious Mr. Boot, which was like slightly anti-American because of just the nature of the story. And that was, you know, warmly welcomed at the Moscow Film Festival, which is like party line as it gets. And this one is tricky because they don't hide the fact that they're doing. And I think that for us, you know, you mentioned Russia RT before. One of the big challenges is intellectually is what do you make of the fact that they sort of self-apply the term propaganda? Because ultimately they invite the fact that, like, they would, like, Putin would want nothing more than for RT to be registered as a foreign agent or as a foreign propaganda entity, because that gives him sort of the moral standing and the argument to register whatever the BBC or the New York Times or anything else is as foreign agents. And so that kind of polarization is really advantageous for autocratic leaders, you know, for Trump, for Putin, for all of them. They want to sow that kind of discord and that kind of, you know, polarization. So it's very hard. I think that it's very hard to predict even what the reaction would be. I mean, you know, my whole approach with the film is to make it effectively like a reductio ad absurdum argument, that you distill the content to such an absurd extent that even people who don't think that it's absurd to think that, you know, let's say Hillary Clinton started each day at the White House with a line of cocaine, that even for people who don't think that that's patently ludicrous, that even they, by watching the film, would kind of get.
Yeah, maybe we should worry if you're invited to screen the film in Russia. In fact,
I think it's supposed to screen at a festival in December, so we'll see if it gets banned.
Okay, and your own position and your own safety, Maxim, do you ever worry about it?
No, I mean, I mostly live in New York, so I've lived in New York for a long time. And no, not really. You know, I always say that basically, I think that
I guess but we've seen. I was going to say we've seen from the Skripals here. You don't have to live in Russia to be in danger.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, I get this question a lot during kind of Q&As and stuff, and I always say that basically, you know, autocratic governments tend to be repressive in unsystematic ways, and so it's hard to predict what sort of, you know, sets off a reaction, and that's a deliberate tactic because that's what causes self-censorship in people, and that's what causes people to, you know, to be more careful and to sort of to not step out of line. And so, you know, and once you realize that, you can't just follow that. You got to go against that.
Well, good luck with that one. The screening is as part of the IFI Documentary Festival. It's running from the 27th of September through to the 30th. This screens on the Saturday evening at 6:40 p.m. It's entitled Our New President. You will find it hilarious, but also very alarming and infuriating and all other kinds of emotions as well. But I guess that was the intention, Maxime, I imagine.
It's like a 78-minute lobotomy.
I love it. I love it. Maxime, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us here on the show.
Thank you.
Cheers. That's Maxime Pozdorovkin joining us there on the line from New York, our new president. It premieres on Saturday, the 29th at 6:40 p.m. at the IFI in Dublin. This is The Green Room on News Talk.
News Talk 106 to 108.